this episode of Fisheries Podcast, I recap how the podcast has done so far and talk about some scary field experiences the listeners and myself have experienced. Thank you for joining me. I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Well, folks, we have made it to 10 episodes. When I started this little adventure, I honestly was not sure how well it would go. I knew that the idea of it drew some attention on Twitter, and that initially got me to dive into it and start recording. It has been and still is a learning process, and I hope that the show can keep growing and evolving and getting better. I have a feeling the audience has consisted more of scientists than not, so here are some numbers on where we stand after 10 episodes. At the time I am recording this, we are up to 1,662 downloads on 9 published episodes, for an average of about 184 unique downloads per episode. The episode with the most downloads is the first episode, the intro, at 273, and the lowest is the latest episode, where I interviewed Indora Roberts, and that has 104 downloads as of this moment. Now my hosting site, podbean.com, gives me a nice array of listening statistics that I can look at for the show overall, or just one episode at a time. The one I enjoyed watching the most, especially when the show first came out, was the geography of the listeners. I'm able to see how many unique downloads come from each state, Canadian province, or foreign country. As you would imagine, the US has the most downloads with about 81% of that 1,600, followed by Canada and the UK, both around 5%. The other 10% includes countries like Australia, Iceland, Russia, Somalia, Indonesia, Turkey, Korea, Thailand, just to name a few. Overall, at least one episode has been downloaded by 19 different countries. I was pretty impressed at the reach that this podcast could get in its relatively short life, just by posting about it on Twitter and Facebook. As for individual states in the U.S., Illinois takes home the top prize for the most downloads, accounting for 8% of U.S. downloads. The rest of the top five includes Kansas, Wisconsin, Texas, and Iowa. And as of right now, there are no downloads in Alaska, Hawaii, Nevada, Wyoming, North Dakota, Kentucky, Delaware, or Mississippi. And I'm sure there are fisheries professionals in those states. I've applied or interviewed for jobs in two of them. So if you know anyone in those states, share the podcast page with them. I'd also be happy to have anyone in those states on the podcast to talk about their work. Like I mentioned, I'm also able to see downloads per Canadian province, and there have only been downloads in 5 unique provinces, with Ontario being the highest with about 43% of Canadian downloads. I'm also able to view what platform and app people use to download the episodes. That isn't quite as exciting to talk about the breakdown, but I'll let you know that about 58% of listeners use an iPhone. Who would have thought? If you follow the podcast on Twitter or Facebook, you'll remember about a month ago I posted about the podcast being available on Spotify now. It hasn't quite taken off as well as the download numbers, but in the short monthish time that it has been on Spotify, it has seen 44 streams, and it breaks down to pretty much 5 streams for each episode. I like looking at these numbers. It validates that it isn't just my family members downloading the episodes, but I'm sure most of the listeners don't really care how many downloads the show is getting. Some probably think I'm bragging, while others probably think, that's it? That's all you're downloading? The real reason that I'm filling you in on all these numbers is to get to this question. How many other formats allow you to put your research out there into the ears of scientists and the public alike and have an average of 190 people listening? Keep in mind that this is just over a 2-month span, and that average climbs each week with a new episode being released. Unless you are a big name in the fisheries world, or you're really good at pushing your research out on Twitter and Facebook, your paper might not reach 100 reads in a year. And I know that I have never given a presentation to a room full of 190 people. Heck, some plenary speakers haven't even had that large of a crowd. Being a guest on this podcast gives you a great opportunity to talk about your research to an audience. And the unique thing about this audience is that it's not all scientists. Yes, there are some members of the public mixed in. I believe it to be the perfect platform to help spread your research to both scientists and the public, and I hope that it continues to grow and become a great tool for both learning and teaching alike. With all that said, if you would like to be a guest on the show, head on over to www.thefisheriespodcast.com and click the Be a Guest tab along the top of the page. There you will find instructions on how to go ahead and schedule a time to record an interview. Or if you'd rather, you can send me an email at nick.kramer@thefisheriespodcast.com. If you aren't a professional or in the field of fisheries and wish to hear more about a certain topic or fish, don't be afraid to let me know either. I'd be more than welcome to start scheduling non-fisheries professional guests. Just send me an email at the email listed before. This podcast isn't and shouldn't be about my interests, but rather those of the audience, and I welcome any guest onto the show or any suggestions for a guest or topic. The recording is just as simple as talking to me on the phone, so come join me and spread the word about all the amazing people and projects we have in this field. With all that said, we do have a nice slate of episodes coming up in the next month. Next week, I'll have Chris Horton on to talk about his work with the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation. On November 18th, I will post an interview with American Fisheries Society President Jesse Trzynski, followed by a conversation with Mark Gaydon of the Great Lakes Fishery Commission that will come out on the 25th of November. If you paid close attention, I did not mention an episode for November 11th. I was hoping to find a veteran who got into fisheries after their service to talk to them, since this episode falls right on Veterans Day. I will be sending out social media posts about that shortly after this episode posts, if I haven't already. If you are a veteran, or if you know anyone that would be willing and able to come on the podcast, I would be very appreciative. Before I even started recording the podcast, I wrote down the dates I wanted to release each and every episode for the next 6 months. I have since extended that to a year out, but I did this so I could plan out episodes. I looked at big meeting dates so I could do previews a week or so before those dates, and also marked down holidays that fell on or near the episode release dates so I could do themed episodes. And unless you've been living under a rock for the past few weeks, you're probably aware that Halloween is this coming Wednesday. And I had this one written down, but I wasn't sure which direction to go with it. I looked up scary-looking fish, but that wouldn't translate well over an audio format such as a podcast. I then thought about fish with Halloween-themed names, but the fisheries blog had done a post or two similar to that, and nobody likes a copycat. Then one day it hit me. Why not talk about things that have actually scared fisheries folks? I then put a post out on Twitter asking for people to share with me moments that they were scared while in the field or in the lab. I didn't get too many responses, but it was enough to break up my personal experiences. Maisie Jeffries, at the Ray Lady on Twitter, said, "In the Bahamas, I was collecting sea urchins when a storm suddenly hit. My research partner was on another boat out a few miles away from us. I didn't know where they were, and they weren't answering their radio. I had to leg it back to the station, and both of us made it just in time." Now, in the field of fisheries, weather is a big one when it comes to safety in the field, and I'm sure that many people also have storm stories. Tony Ann Keeling, at Tony Ann Keeling 7 on Twitter, was also in the Bahamas when her scary situation occurred. "We were sitting in storm safety position near the tallest mangrove trees we could find during a two-hour-long thunderstorm right over our heads in a mangrove swamp in, I'm going to butcher this one, Eleuthera, Bahamas, while sampling for bonefish. It sounds to me like I need to stay away from the Bahamas during storm season," as two of the three responses I got both mentioned a scary experience in the Bahamas. "My experience are more related to the wind conditions than a storm, but in one case, the wind was brought on by an oncoming storm front. This occurred while I was a graduate student on the Mississippi River while doing my master's work on paddlefish. During the middle of November, when netting for paddlefish was going real good, there was going to be a storm front coming through, bringing with it 20 to 25 mile per hour south winds. On most waters, winds that strong are too much to be out on, unless you have one of those big whaler boats on the Great Lakes or the oceans. But on the Mississippi, south winds, especially at speeds that high, created some larger than normal waves because the wind was going against the flow of the river. So we knew that this front was supposed to come through at around 1 or 2 p.m. the following day. So we reset our nets, knowing that we could have our nets pulled and out of the water before the storm came. But we set in some side channels just in case the wind came in a little earlier, so we weren't quite as vulnerable. We pulled the first few in, but then we got into some trouble with another. It was twisted or snagged, I can't quite remember. And we finally got it pulled in, but we were running a little behind, and the front just happened to be coming in a little earlier. Well, it decided to hit us right when we needed to cross the main channel and head a few miles upstream to the next side channel. At first, we started crossing the channel, taking it slow, making progress, but then the waves started getting big, like really big, like oh crap big. It turns out, there was a barge about a mile upstream that decided to hold against the shore and wait for the storm to pass. And it was using its motors to hold in place along the shoreline, causing larger than normal waves. Anyone that has ever seen one of these barges heading up river in the unimpounded stretch knows the size of these waves. It looks like the ones you would draw as a kid whenever you drew water, except they could eat our 24-foot flat-bottom boat right up. Eventually, we made it across the channel and motored along the shore, and at one point, even motored in between the barge and the shoreline, drawing some weird looks from the crew. To top it all off, we had some of another grad student's friends in the boat, and right before we pulled up to the last net, he asked, "What happens if you can't find your nets?" And I responded, "That never happens. We always bring back all our gear." So we pulled up to our net, and we started pulling in the 50-foot buoy rope attached to the end of it. And it got tight. As is the case, we tied it off to the boat and started pulling on it, or pushing on it, but the rope broke. "No problem," I thought. "We'll just grab the other end of the net that's attached to the dike." So we motor up, and the sand anchor is completely gone. So now we can't find either end of the net. No buoys are floating in the water. Luckily, we had a net drag, and we drug for the net for a few hours, it seemed like. We would snag something every once in a while, but it was not budging at all. We could never pull any of the net up to the surface to retrieve any of it. We never even saw a piece of it. And as far as I know, no one has found it or seen it since, even during low water. But we all made it back to the ramp safe and dry. Alternatively, sometimes the weather can be beautiful, but there can still be things to be scared of. Matt Beauregard, at Visual Persist on Twitter and Instagram, shared a picture of a truck door with a bullet hole in it. The caption read, "Fired by a mayor involved in drugs and illegal fishing in the Philippines." Now, I've heard stories about people being robbed at boat ramps after dark, but never to the point of getting shot, and definitely never to the point of having someone shoot at you because of your work. Scott Bonar has given a presentation on using verbal judo to resolve conflict, a skill that I'm sure would prove quite useful in these scenarios. If I remember correctly, during his presentation he mentioned a time when his boat and his crew were shot around, but not at, while they were sampling a lake in Washington State. Now both of these situations are those that I wish I'd never have to deal with, and I hope to never even come close to experiencing. My non-weather related stories aren't quite as potentially lethal, but still entertaining and hopefully serve as a PSA. During my first summer of graduate school, we traveled up to St. Louis every week to trawl Mozenthine Island for larval sturgeon and to do larval trawls at the confluence of the Missouri River to monitor Asian carp hatchings. One day, we were trying out the newly invented Laser Wolf electric surface trawl that we built to try and capture the elusive 12-inch silver carp. We were on the Missouri River behind a dike, motoring our way to a site, and as is the case, a carp jumped up. Instinctively, I ducked out of the way as it was coming straight for me. Fortunately, it missed me, and I came out unscathed. But the 5-pound fish landed right on the digital throttle of our 150-horse Mercury Verado outboard that was still in gear. The boat took off, and all three of us on the boat fell flat on our ass. Fortunately, no one got hurt, and we didn't hit anything or break anything on the boat. So keep that in mind if you're ever in silver carp-infested waters to always wear your kill lanyard. It may save you from having to do some swimming and a whole lot of explaining. Now I could go on with some stories about driving over the Chain of Rocks Dam in St. Louis, seeing a giant cottonwood tree get swirled around upright in an eddy of a closing structure, or pulling nets on the river with fog so dense you couldn't see past the bow of the boat. But we only have so much time, and I'd much rather hear your stories. And we need to save some stories for another time. If you have any scary field or lab stories, I would be glad to hear them. Share them with me on Twitter, at FisheriesPod, or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. I look forward to hearing your scary stories. That's all I have for this episode, so it's a little bit shorter, so have a fun and eventful Halloween week. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, or old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. And if you would like some Swedish fish and Fish Kansas fish ID cards, you'll have to come trick-or-treating in my neighborhood. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you catch next week's when I chat with Chris Horton of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation and learn how fisheries and politics come together. You can download and subscribe to the show on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. If you have any people, projects, or topics you'd like to hear about, reach out and let me know or send them to thefisheriespodcast.com and click the Be a Guest tab. And if you or someone you know is a veteran doing fisheries work and interested in being a podcast, get a hold of me. I would be honored to have you on the show. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 10th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, wear your kill switch lanyard when boating around those pesky silver carp.